Medicom Medical Publishers produces peer-reviewed reports and highlights on major medical meetings. We bring the Congress to the physician.
Welcome to this podcast brought to you by Medicom Medical Publishers. My name is Dr. Rachel Giles, and I'm the Medical Science Officer at Medicom. Today, I'm going to talk about six of the presentations that were held at the European Committee for the Treatment and Research in Multiple Sclerosis, or ECTRIMS, 2021. And that was held virtually between the 13th and the 15th of October, 2021. The selection I make to cover is entirely my own, so please feel free to make suggestions if you think other things should be included. Thanks so much. Enjoy listening.
Thank you to all the healthcare professionals who have worked so hard to bring us through the current pandemic.
A presentation held by Dr. Peter Alping from the Karolinska Institute in Stockholm, Sweden, talked about a comparative analysis of common initial multiple sclerosis therapies, including Swedish multiple sclerosis patients. So Dr. Alping started by saying that direct comparison of therapies provide valuable information for physicians treating MS patients, and therefore the current real-world study in Stockholm investigated the effectiveness of the most frequently used initial MS therapies in Sweden. And MS patients, if they were ever treated with rituximab, and there were 472 of those, natalizumab, there were 269 of those, dimethyl fumarate, that was 339 patients, or injectables such as interferon beta or glatiramer acetate, and there were 858 of those, were followed between the years 2010 and 2020. So the first relapse, the time to event, the MRI lesion rates, and the expanded disability status scale, and treatment discontinuation, time to event, were the outcome measures of that particular study. Rituximab served as the reference therapy. Initial treatment with injectables demonstrated the highest probability of relapse with a hazard ratio of 6.0. So there was a six-fold increase in that particular Swedish population, followed by dimethyl fumarate, which had a hazard ratio of 2.9, natalizumab with a hazard ratio of 1.8. However, baseline characteristics showed that natalizumab users were on average younger and had experienced most relapses prior to the study onset. For that reason, the results should be interpreted with caution. Rate ratios of MRI lesions favored initial rituximab therapy over injectables with a rate ratio of 4.5, and when compared with dimethyl fumarate, 4.8, and natalizumab, 1.9. Interestingly, only injectables demonstrated significantly higher EDSS scores than rituximab. Natalizumab and dimethyl fumarate showed similar EDSS scores to rituximab. The time to treatment discontinuation was the shortest for injectables, followed by dimethyl fumarate and natalizumab. Patients who were initially treated with dimethyl fumarate or injectables discontinued mainly due to adverse events or an inadequate effect of the therapy. Natalizumab users frequently discontinued their therapy due to JC virus positivity and the fear of progressive multifocal leukoencephalopathy. In this particular comparative analysis of the common initial MS therapies in these Swedish patients, rituximab actually showed the lowest risk of relapses and MRI lesions. Furthermore, the lowest probability of switching therapy was also observed in rituximab, and injectables demonstrated the highest probability of relapse and treatment discontinuation. In a presentation held by Dr. Douglas Arnold from McGill University in Canada, some preliminary data from a phase 1 open-labeled extension trial investigating the therapy ATA188 for progressive multiple sclerosis showed that this drug was generally not only well tolerated, but it did drive sustained disability improvement in a significant proportion of patients. The background to this, or the rationale to this particular study, is that Epstein-Barr virus seems to be strongly involved in the pathogenesis of multiple sclerosis. And therefore, the current trial assessed whether ATA188 was a potential therapy for patients with progressive multiple sclerosis. ATA188, it's an investigational, off-the-shelf, allogenic Epstein-Barr virus-targeted T-cell immunotherapy. In total, 25 patients with progressive multiple sclerosis followed a 12-month dose escalation period of ATA188, and hereafter patients were invited to enter a 4-year open-label extension period. Sustained disability improvement was demonstrated in 7 out of the 24 patients at 12 months, and the open-label extension was entered by about 6 out of 7 patients who achieved sustained disability improvement, and 12 out of 17 patients who did not achieve sustained disability improvement. During the open label extension period, two of the patients who did not achieve sustained disability improvement did actually improve to achieve that. MTRs, which is an MRI marker of myelin density, also improved significantly in patients who achieved sustained expanded disability status scale improvement at any time. And the MTR rates were significantly improved in T2 lesions and numerically improved in normal appearing brain tissue. No safety issues were observed that caused concern. So in short, this preliminary data really does look like ATA188 might drive sustained disability improvement, but also that improved magnetization transfer ratios seemed to indicate that in patients who had achieved sustained disease improvement might actually have some remyelination occurring. In a post-hoc analysis of a phase 2 randomized trial, evobrutinib at 75 milligrams twice daily significantly lowered the baseline blood neurofilament light chain levels, or NFLs. So we know that NFLs is an established biomarker of neuroaxonal damage in multiple sclerosis. A total of 162 patients were included in this modified intent-to-treat population for whom NFL values at baseline were available, including the dimethyl fumarate control arm of the original study. Participants were stratified by high dose, so at 75 milligrams evobrutinib once daily or twice daily, and there were 74 patients in that group, or placebo low dose, so placebo or evobrutinib at 25 milligrams once daily, and there were 88 of those patients. They were also stratified by mean NFL levels at baseline, and they were stratified as either having high levels, and there were 80 of those patients, or low levels with 82 patients in that group, with a cutoff value of 11.36 picograms per milliliter. Treatment effect on qualified relapses was evaluated over 24 weeks, and non-gadolinium enhancing T1 and T2 lesions over weeks 12, 16, 20, and 24. Patients with high NFL levels had a higher disease burden at baseline, with more clinical relapses in the past 2 years, a higher EDSS score, more gadolinium-positive T1 lesions, and higher T2 lesion volume. Treatment results showed the following. So firstly, the odds of qualified relapse were significantly higher in the high baseline NFLs, with an odds ratio of over 6 and a significant p-value. They were also significantly reduced in the evobrutinib high dose group versus placebo low dose, and that was an odds ratio of 0.12. Patients with high NFL levels at baseline had higher gadolinium-positive T1 activity. The cumulative number of gadolinium-positive T1 lesions was significantly reduced in the high evobrutinib dose group. Both the high NFL level group, so with a relative ratio of 69.2%, and in the low NFL group with a relative ratio of 69.4%. Patients with high NFL levels at baseline also had higher T2 lesion activity. New or enlarging T2 activity was observed for the high evobrutinib dose group, regardless of the NFL levels. The authors concluded that these outcomes further support the value of blood NFL levels in prognostic marker of MS disease activity, and it was important to note that the evobrutinib significantly reduced the MRI activity and the number of patients with qualified relapses in multiple sclerosis patients, regardless of their baseline blood neurofilament light chain levels. But of note, high levels of NFLs at baseline was highly predictive of increased relapse and MRI lesion activity. Onwards to neuromyelitis optica spectrum disorder, better known as NMOSD. And this was looking at satralizumab in that disease, which is a subcutaneously administered IL-6 receptor agonist. It has been shown to significantly reduce the risk of relapse in patients with aquaporin-4 positive disease. And looking at two double-blinded, randomized controlled phase 3 trials, namely the Sakura Sky or Sakura Star trials, it should be noted that a really favorable safety profile was observed in the double-blinded phase. So the current study presented by Dr. Ingo Kleiter from the Ruhr-Universität Bochum in Germany looked at the open-label extension phase of these two trials. There were 111 patients included in that analysis, And in this open-label extension period, 120 milligrams satralizumab was administered every 4 weeks. Efficacy endpoints were investigator-assessed protocol-defined relapses, severe IDPR, so relapses, at week 192. At a median duration of approximately 4 years exposure to satralizumab, 71% of the patients from the SAKURA SKY and 73% of the patients from the SAKURA STAR trials were free from relapse. This corresponded to a mean annual IDPR rate of 0.20. In addition, most patients were free from severe relapse, and that was in the SAKURA SKY cohort 90% and in the SAKURA STAR cohort 91%. Sustained EDSS worsening was observed in 10% from the SAKURA SKY trial and 14% from the SAKURA STARS trial. No new safety issues emerged with long-term satralizumab treatment in this population. So in short, sustained efficacy of satralizumab was observed for patients with aquaporin 4 seropositive neuromyelitis optica spectrum disorder in the open label extension period of the phase 3 trials SAKURA SKY and SAKURA STAR. And that was with a follow-up of 3.7 years. The majority of patients remained free from relapse, severe relapse, or worsening of disease. Moreover, the favorable safety profile of that drug was assessed in the double-blinded phase, and it was maintained during this extended exposure period. The phase 3 results of the Ultimate 1 and Ultimate 2 global studies was presented by Professor Lawrence Steinman from Stanford University in California. And this was looking at an investigational anti-CD20 monoclonal antibody called ublituximab. And it's currently under investigation for the treatment of multiple sclerosis. It's this new agent. It's glyco-engineered to allow for lower doses and only 1 hour infusion time after initial infusion. The study presented the 96-week results of the randomized multicenter double-blinded Ultimate 1 and Ultimate 2 phase 3 trials. In both trials, subjects with confirmed relapsing multiple sclerosis, 549 patients in the Ultimate 1 trial and 545 patients included in the Ultimate 2 trial, and they were randomized 1-to-1 to receive ublituximab or 14 milligrams teriflunomide oral once daily. Patients in the ublituximab arm received 150 milligrams intravenous infusion at day 3, followed by 450 milligrams 1 hour IV infusion at days 15, and then every 24 weeks after that. The primary endpoint was the annualized relapse rate at week 96. Ublituximab significantly reduced the annualized relapse rate at 59.4% for the Ultimate 1 trial and 49.1% reduction in the Ultimate 2 trial. The relative reductions of new or enlarging T2 lesions displayed similar results. In both trials, the proportion of patients who showed no evidence of disease activity were higher than the ublituximab receivers at 44.6% in Ultimate 1 and 43% in Ultimate 2 than in teriflunomide receivers, which was 15% in Ultimate 1 and 11.4% in Ultimate 2. Multiple sclerosis functional composite scores displayed patients benefit from ublituximab. A favorable study and tolerability profile was observed for ublituximab. Any adverse events were reported in approximately 88% of the patients, regardless of treatment arm. Infusion-related reactions, headache, and nasopharyngitis were the most reported adverse events in the ublituximab arm. Serious adverse events were observed in 9.5% of the patients treated with ublituximab, being mostly infections and infestations. So in short, the ublituximab really was more efficacious than teriflunomide in patients with relapsing MS, and annualized relapse rates and MRI parameters demonstrated superiority of ublituximab over teriflunomide. Moreover, the favorable safety results showed that ublituximab has potential to become the first 1 hour anti-CD20 infusion therapy in this population. Another phase 3 trial presented at ECTRIMS this year was the phase 3 ORATORIO trial, and it looked at ocrelizumab and versus placebo in patients with primary progressive multiple sclerosis. This data was presented by Dr. Jerry Walensky from the University of Texas Health Center in Houston, Texas, and these were the 8-year follow-up study results that were presented this year. Ocrelizumab outperformed placebo in patients with PPMS in the 144-week double-blind plus extended controlled periods of the randomized controlled phase 3 ORATORIO trial. The open-label extension of this trial assessed the long-term efficacy and safety of ocrelizumab in patients, so 517 patients, maintaining or switching to ocrelizumab theory, so the switching were the prior placebo receivers from that trial. Time to the first 48-week confirmed disability progression, the CDP, on the expanded disability status scale, the EDSS, of greater than or equal to 1 point in patients with an EDSS less than or equal to 5.5 at baseline, or half a point improvement in patients with an EDSS of greater than 5.5 at baseline. And that was the primary endpoint of that trial. At week 408, initial ocrelizumab users, so those that were randomized to the ocrelizumab arm in the blinded phase of ORATORIO trial, displayed fewer 48-week CDP-EDSS events, 55.85%, than delayed treatment receivers who were in the placebo arm originally and got the ocrelizumab later, and that was 67.5%. Combining all periods of the study, the reduced risk of CDP-EDSS events was 29% for ocrelizumab users. The risk of repeated 48-week CDP-EDSS events was lower in ocrelizumab receivers as well, and the mean cumulative number of repeated CDP-EDSS was 0.94 in early ocrelizumab users versus 1.2 in delayed ocrelizumab users. Over 8 years, the risk of achieving 48-week CDP-EDSS score of greater than or equal to 7, representing wheelchair dependence, was numerically lower, 33%, in the initial ocrelizumab subjects. So the authors concluded from this long-term follow-up study that patients with primary progressive MS who were originally randomized to ocrelizumab in the phase 3 ORATORIO trial, they actually had a lower risk of disability progression than the patients randomized to the placebo arm after 8 years of follow-up. And this was the main result of the open-label extension period of that trial. In addition, patients who were randomized to the ocrelizumab arm in the initial trial had significantly reduced rate of recurrent 48-week confirmed disability progression events compared with those who received ocrelizumab only in the open-label extension period of this trial. That's all the time we have for today. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you learned something about some of the talks and the newer developments in the multiple sclerosis world. Stay safe and stay healthy.
This podcast was produced by Medicom Medical Publishers.